look up esports if you don't know what esports is. Right. It's like, it's what cryptocurrency was 2 years ago or a year ago. It's like, you know, what cannabis is now. It's like the hottest industry out there.
You're listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. This is your seat at the table. Thank you for tuning in to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. Today, Roland talks with Trevor Jensen, CEO, board member, and co-founder for several multi-million dollar companies. They dive into Trevor's two current endeavors, which include the High School Esports League and Bullybone. So let's get stuck in, and be sure to hit the subscribe button and share this podcast with your business-minded friends.
Hey, everybody. This is Roland Frazier with Business Lunch, and I'm very excited to have my guest here today, Trevor Jensen. Trevor, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be on.
It's really fun because we met through an introduction. Was that Jack that made the first introduction?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was Jack.
A mutual friend of ours made the introduction, and then through one of Jack's connections, Ken Tashner, I found out you were doing the High School Esports League, yep. And we talked about that a little bit, and then you sent over a deck, and I slid in as an investor in your seed round. Is that what we ended up with?
Yep, it's a seed round.
Nice, and there's an A that's about to happen.
Yeah, the A's getting a lot of traction.
That's pretty cool. So you are currently, in that, you're a co-founder and kind of advisor type role, right?
Correct.
As well as one of the owners.
Yep.
And then you also have another company called Bullybone.
Yep.
And Bullybone, you're the CEO of.
Correct.
Because dog chew toys and video games, absolutely. I mean,
if you
were going to be in one, you'd be in both.
Absolutely.
You know, nobody would wonder.
You look up any fund, and they obviously have a little earmark for dog toys and esports.
Yeah, there's a direct correlation, obviously.
Right.
So since there's not, tell us a little bit about. Let's start with the esports league. Let's talk about. So it's High School Esports League.
Yep, correct.
And that's the name of the company.
That is the name of the company.
And it's out of, because I remember when I sent my money, I had to look up the address for it. It's like Kansas or something?
Kansas City.
Yeah, Kansas City.
Yep.
So can you tell us about what that is and how it came about and why, how you could possibly make any money in video games?
Yeah, absolutely. The three other founders are gamers. They're guys who've been playing games their whole life. And when they got out of high school, they kind of started this league, and the whole premise of it was, I wish I had an esports league when I was in high school, so I'm going to create it for other high schoolers so they can benefit. And, I mean, they were sleeping on the couch in the office, delivering pizzas so that they could run this league and make it free for everybody.
And what is the league exactly for people who don't know exactly?
So if you think of basketball, football, lacrosse, anything in high school, you have a team and you play against other high schools and you compete for championships and all sorts of different prizes. That's what this is. You can play video games for your high school and compete against other high schools.
It's pretty awesome. You don't have to be an amazing athlete.
Right, right. And I mean, it opens it up. You know, there's, for every one athlete, there's 20 other people who aren't athletes.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. So these guys kind of decided they wanted to start their own thing.
Yep.
And they're in Kansas and doing that. And then what happens?
Yeah, so they keep getting acquisition offers right and left from all kinds of people who want to acquire their company. So they get a hold of me through one of my investors in Bullybone, and I meant to just mentor them for a little while, give them an hour or two.
Kind of help them deal with all the offers and
figure
out
absolutely.
What to do.
And figure out that, you know, a lot of these offers are smoke and mirrors, how to vet them, different things like that. And as I got into it and started looking at it, man, I started learning about this esports world, and it just kind of sucked me in.
Do you have any of the stats off the top of your head? Because it's insane. I think we were talking just before the show started that it surprises you when you don't know anything about it how giant this thing is that most people aren't even aware of.
Yeah, I mean, the one that gets everybody is you'll go to an esports tournament and they'll have more viewers than the Super Bowl and then the World Series and all these major sporting events.
Right.
They'll be standing room only, people packed out the door, you can't get tickets. That's easy to find. You just Google esports and you see the mania around it. And then, you know, you start looking into it. Was that just an anomaly or is that? And then you see that, no, there's this huge, huge cohort of people who are just fanatics for esports.
Right, including our chief engineer here.
Yep.
So then you started to advise them. You found out a little bit more about it, and we're like, oh my gosh, it's actually this giant opportunity. What did you do from there?
Basically told them the offers on the table are not good offers, to pass on them, and just started building a team out around them to help them with different things and avoid landmines, bring in some of the people I know, advisors, just build the team out around them, and then pull in a little bit of money here and there through, you know, angels, smaller amounts. They're already doing well. They had revenue. One of the big things was I started advising them to charge students. We started at $5 per person per month. Then it bumped
up. To be a member of the league.
To be a member of the league.
Who were they charging originally?
They weren't charging anybody. They were doing it for free.
So where'd the revenue come from? Sponsors?
They didn't have revenue.
Came in no revenue.
I came in and there was no revenue going on. They were just doing it for free and they were paying for it out of their own pocket, working pizza jobs just to pay for it because they knew it needed to exist.
Mm-hmm.
So they were probably 4 or 5 years in when I got involved and I said, let's just test this out. Let's see if people will pay. And they were more than happy to pay. In fact, all the community that they had built said, you should have been doing this a long time ago. This is, we love this.
They're like, well, you could have just sent us money. That would have been nice.
yeah.
That's funny. And so you said, let's charge $5 a month. Is that what it is?
$5 a month. Okay. And then we just kind of kept testing the price, boosting it up and offering different things. And here we are today. We're having people prepay 3 years in advance, giving them a computer lab for free as they sign up. And I mean, the revenue model now is much different than it was 2.5 years ago.
What about sponsorships and any money that comes in through the high school or anything like that? Or
so right now, the high schools are the ones, for the majority of the accounts, paying the league fees.
They are, okay. Yep. For the kids.
Right.
Okay.
We haven't taken any sponsorship dollars, very, very small amounts, but we haven't taken any big sponsorship dollars yet. I think that's a huge opportunity for us, mm-hmm. but in order to keep the integrity of the league, we've just never had to take sponsorship dollars or be beholden to sponsors.
Nice. And is it for all games or a particular series of games, or how does that work?
We basically let the community tell us which games they want to offer.
Okay.
So whatever the most popular games are the ones we'll offer, and the ones that aren't popular, we kind of drop off our platform. Right now, I think it's Fortnite's obviously very, very popular. Overwatch is popular. CSGO is popular. So we just kind of let Smash Brothers, surprisingly, is one of our biggest games.
It's a great game.
It is a great game. But yeah, we let the community decide.
Okay. League of Legends?
League of Legends is not on our platform.
They have done so much on their own. Is that why?
They actually are going a different route through the high school stuff. They're partnering with the competitor, who we won't get into that whole debacle.
Okay. And there's really two or three in the space right now. Is that correct?
There's us. There's one other group that's raised a lot of money but hasn't really found any traction yet.
Yeah.
And there's a few other.
They raised like a ton of money, right?
They raised
like
a ton of 100 money.
100 million or something like that?
Yeah, 96 million,
yeah,
I think it is.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. Yeah. That's crazy.
And they've been kind of trying to go top down, and that approach hasn't worked with people who play games because they don't like being force-fed
mm-hmm.
certain things. The grassroots, bottom-up approach is definitely resonates better with the gamers.
How many high schools then are part of the HSEL?
HSEL, we are past 2,200 now.
It's amazing.
2,200, yep.
That's crazy because the competitors, I think it's like 130, right? It's not
yeah,
very many.
They're in the low hundreds from what we understand.
All right, nice. He says with a big smile. I like
that.
So now you said you helped them build a team. So this is really cool for the people that are listening that are entrepreneurial, whether they are in the position of delivering pizzas to support the hobby that they hope will turn into a business, or they're trying to come in and help somebody build a team. What's the first step? What do you do? So you have the conversation with these guys, and they've got something that's been around for 3 or 4 years. There's no revenue, but you see great opportunity and traction. Where do you start?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things was these people are throwing big offers with big numbers, but they didn't have a lot of substance behind them.
Was it like equity offers, stock?
Yeah, equity. We're going to roll you up into this new entity that we're going to create.
And we'll give you stock.
Yeah, but that has no money in it
right.
yet. But
no
we're
liquidity.
Right, right. But they're getting intimidated by all this money and these people kind of trying to bully them, talk them around. So really just kind of fixing their mindset that basically these are all opportunities to grow this stuff. You know, you don't have to know this right now. You will know it later. But, you know, let's just kind of get through this and use it as opportunities to grow. And that kind of growth mindset is the biggest part of the team. Only bringing on people who share those values, share that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
We can put the pieces in place. But if everyone's kind of got that culture and moving forward in the right direction, that's the biggest thing to focus on with these teams.
Who'd you bring on first? What kind of team person?
I brought on a couple advisors. One of my trusted guys, Tim Suskey, that I work with, and some other projects to start building out some of the sales funnels and sales channels. Because it was all inbound inbound stuff at that point. Brought in a couple guys from Riot who really helped at the time when we needed it, and they helped build out the community. We have an ambassador army. We have over 1,600 ambassadors.
Yeah, super smart.
Yep, in high school. We brought on a partner with Tilly's so that we were able to basically send out swag bags to all these ambassadors and empower them to go sign up other high schools.
Nice.
You know, and then started dialing in the books, started dialing in the customer service, all the different tech stuff.
This was this one person, or there were...
Just multiple people.
Okay. So the people at Riot, did you happen to know people at Riot, or did you...
No, they were, I guess, hired guns, so to speak. They were consultants out there, and there was a little group. They had been working at Riot, and they were kind of freelancing, and I grew a nice little relationship with those guys. And
how did you find them?
Networking. Just getting out there, talking to everybody, making calls, going to the networking events, you know, vetting people. One of the other key people I brought on was Yoshio Osaki, who is, he's the CEO of IDG Consulting, the biggest data analytics firm in esports. So brought him on board, and he was really good for connections and for vetting different people.
And did you know him before?
Nope. Met him all through this esports thing and just kind of, I don't know, getting out there and getting in the mix.
So this is what I'd love to do is just to break down for a minute, because for the average person that's listening, they're like, yeah, sure, step one, get your two buddies from Riot and then get the guy from IDG. But you didn't know them, and you got them through kind of organically, but with organically with intention. Can you talk a little bit about, like, if you were going about that, maybe you remember or maybe you don't, but somebody out there is listening and they're thinking about this, and there are big, smart, I mean, I think it was number one, you said, hey, in this esports industry, who are the major players? Riot's a huge player. IDG's a huge player. And then you said, I should probably look for people, I'm guessing. You correct me if I'm wrong. I should probably find some of these people to bring on as advisors because they've been there, done it, seen it. They're going to help us get there faster. Is that fair?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that makes it sound very intentional. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe I just do this intuitively, but start going to different conferences and start just talking to different people. And I mean, having your elevator pitch about your company is really important, because if you get people that you're talking to excited, they'll make an introduction to someone who makes an introduction to someone, and the word starts traveling fast. So at that time, we didn't have a ton of traction, but we had enough to create kind of a story that, I mean, it has virality in those communities and it spreads. And then you start getting introductions to people and then you talk to them. And
is your elevator pitch, how long is that? Ideally, 30 seconds, a minute?
You got to hook people with like the first kind of sentence or sentence or two, or else they start spacing out and dozing off.
What's the HSEL elevator pitch?
Basically, if you own the high school audience, you own all of esports. And we are the biggest and fastest growing high school esports community there is.
Okay, nice. That's pretty sexy. I like
it. yeah. Cool. And they, well, what does that mean? Well, if you have the high school audience, all the pro teams need talent. Well, where do they come for that? High school. All the colleges, they need talent. Where do they come to? High school. We've facilitated 40 million in scholarships in the last 3 years. So you can just kind of expand on that. And before you know it, people are talking and they want to hear more.
Okay, so the steps would be you find the idea or you have the idea. You get a little bit of traction, then you got to know your elevator pitch, put that together, hook them in the first 15 seconds. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Hook them in the first 15 seconds. And then is there an action step at the end of the elevator pitch or an offer or an ask? What do you do? So you're at the conference and you just met me and you don't know who I am, but I seem like I maybe know some people. You give me the pitch and I'm like, that sounds really cool.
So once you've kind of done that pitch and you're engaging them, then you see that you have their attention. Mm-hmm. So now you're engaged in a conversation. And I've heard some of your podcasts and I like that you do this too, but then how can I help you? Like, what are you looking for? What are you trying to accomplish?
Right.
And when you can kind of get to that, now you're developing a rapport and you're helping each other. So, and it can't just be something you're just saying. You have to actually try to help the people.
Right, yeah. A lot of people say it and then immediately are like, oh, right. You know, yeah.
Well, and then everything will fall flat on its face if you're not genuine.
Yeah.
There's a lot of times where, you know, you help someone and they don't help you back, and that's fine. You got to enjoy doing that.
That's an investment to me. That's a deposit in the bank of karma. If nothing ever comes, that's fine. It actually will, just in doing the good. It'll make you feel good. But it always, like, they'll tell somebody, they'll be in some situation, oh, yeah, you know, Trevor helped me out. He gave me that tip about blah, 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 or whatever, right? And then that will come back to you.
You nailed it right there. That's exactly it. That's it wasn't automatic. It wasn't right away. But as you're doing that, as I'm getting into the esports scene, as I'm talking to people, helping them in whatever ways I can, now it all starts coming back. And everyone, I mean, now all of a sudden, there's a bunch of inbound stuff coming to me.
Right. Okay. And then you basically, from those opportunities, selected the people. You didn't say, I need two people from Riot. You just were like, I need some smart people that have done communities before. Oh, I met two people from Riot that do that. Cool. Here's the intro, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
So now, anything else on the team? That's the kind of the advisory team, or was that actually some operators?
So that Riot team was actually operators for a little while. You know, they were like a plug-and-play group. Yep. Contractors. We used them for 6 to 12 months, and then we're able to hire people in-house. So fast forwarding today, I had a friend who just sold a company, a big company, had an acquisition in the esports space, and I'm bringing him on board to be COO and just kind of like handle operations, because now we have the money, now we have the kind of momentum to bring someone in-house full-time. So sometimes you're kind of shuffling people around too. You might have to use contractors in the beginning until you get enough momentum to hire people full-time.
Mm-hmm. And then is there any vetting process that you particularly like to find those people to be sure that they're a good fit for the company you're hooking them up with?
So, and then this goes back to, you know, what we were talking about, just talking to people, helping them out. Now all of a sudden I know a bunch of people in the esports world. So when a name comes up or someone's, we go talk to them. We know all the people at Twitch. We know all the people at all the different everywhere. So when a name comes up, we go vet them. Yoshio is great. He knows everybody. I mean, yeah. He tracks the data in the esports world. So anyone we need to know about, he knows. And he's the most genuine, like, nice guy you'll ever meet. And he cares about the league and all that. So, you know, you just develop this network where you can kind of vet people and see what people say about them.
Now, I think this is worth about 4 times what it was already from when you came in, or maybe it's even more than that. I know that Ken was saying something about that. So do you flip it and make your 4X, or do you do some other stuff? What's the plan?
It's really up to the three other founders, mm-hmm. and they're so passionate about this that I don't think it's a flip. I mean, you know, we've had acquisition offers that, you know, our big competitor who raised all the money. Well, if we're the ones with all the traction and they're the ones with all the money.
Yeah,
they've
exactly.
tried to come and get us a couple times. But their values, their kind of system doesn't align with the founders, and so that deal would never happen. It's those three guys care so much about this, and I care about them, and I care about, you know, making them happy and making sure that they're fulfilled. So there is a scenario. I mean, we're working with Microsoft. They're expressing all kinds of interest in long-term relationships, and I think there's scenarios where we get rolled up or where we continue to grow, but as long as this high school league is out there for people and the founders can kind of, we can all be part of it, I think that's the main plan. I don't think it's a flip where we all get out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, no amount, you get a bunch of money and then what do? You
know, exactly.
Find something you love. What if you're already doing what you love?
Yeah, I agree with you 1,000%. Okay. All right, cool. Anything else on that you think would be interesting to share with people before we switch over to the Bully Bone story?
Look up esports if you don't know what esports is.
Right.
It's like, it's what cryptocurrency was 2 years ago or a year ago. It's like, you know, what cannabis is now. It's like the hottest industry out there.
There was a really great tech, I think it was JWT that did it, the research firm, and that really just lays it out. And it's, I know it's available because it was the first time that I looked at it. And that was, like I said, 2014, 2015. And I'm sure they've updated, but it's pretty amazing industry that
jaw-dropping,
currently, I think, flowing a bit under the, certainly the public consciousness and a lot of the investment banking world. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so then pre this, you were doing the Bully Bone Company, which you're the CEO of now. Let's talk a little bit about what is it first?
So Bully Bone, we make USA-made dog chew toys. We're in Walmart, Albertsons, Tractor Supply. We're in about 8,000 stores right now, and we are going into Dollar General in March and a few others. Just went on to Chewy.com. So we're going to be in about 15,000 stores by March.
That's pretty exciting.
Next year, yeah.
So how did that start? Obviously, you had a passion for chewing on dog toys. And
yeah, I mean, yeah, I just...
Like any...
These were my favorite toys that I chewed on, so...
My parents gave me those because, you know, Legos were expensive.
Yeah, and it kept me quiet, so... So this was actually an acquisition. There was a guy, Lee Bob Willingham, who's still my partner, mm-hmm. and he's a manufacturer. And he's just world class at manufacturing. And I kind of developed this framework. I had a company before this, was actually the founder of PetSmart, and myself had a consulting company together.
Oh, wow, cool.
So I got to consult for, you know, 100, 200 different pet companies.
Wow.
So I kind of had this framework of what kind of business I wanted to acquire that I could scale and, you know, would be perfect for an acquisition.
This is an intentional, I'm looking for something I can
I'm
do.
I'm looking this for this. These are okay. All the check boxes, and I need something that fits this exactly.
Okay.
I developed this framework by basically talking to all the investment bankers and brokers and saying, if a perfect company fell out of the sky into your lap that you could take out to market and get 20 bids on, what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And then I just dissected all the information, and I got this framework. Bullybone came along through that consulting company and basically checked off all the boxes. I looked at, you know, again, 100 to 200 different companies,
mm-hmm.
and this one was perfect. And, you know, the guy who was running it at the time was open to a scenario where I acquired the majority interest and put all the money into scale, and he could just kind of focus on the manufacturing component.
Mm-hmm.
And away we went. I raised $2.5 million, and we're off to the races.
So let's talk about, I like, number one, if anybody's thinking about deal flow, if they have a particular skill. Did you have some experience in the pet industry before? Is that...
It was just through that consulting company.
I mean, to get in the deal with the PetSmart founder guy to do the consulting?
This may spin us off into a tangent, but you could bring us back.
Yeah, totally cool.
I was doing real estate, walking my dog, and I got hit by a car and almost died.
Uh-huh.
And then I had this soul searching, if I was going to die tomorrow, what would I do? And it was play with dogs and lead a cool team and have my own company.
Okay.
So I launched a lighted collar and leash company.
Okay.
It did okay, but that story...
So that- You obviously got hit at night then.
Yeah, it was early in the morning. It was early like 5 a.m. Okay. Yeah,
right. But yep. Something to actually light at least, just like the bicycle light that flashes. Maybe you won't hit it if...
That's exactly right.
Okay,
yep.
Cool. So that was an e-commerce play.
It was an e-commerce play, but we got into retail and we had a kiosk and all kinds of different stuff.
Okay.
The founder of PetSmart saw the video and like, because the news picked up on this accident and this whole thing.
You had a story, which is pretty great.
A story, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turned a bad thing into a good thing.
Yeah.
And so he had kind of been watching me, and when that company didn't do well, because I didn't know what I was doing. It was my first time from real estate into lighted collars and leashes. I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
But he came to me, and he said, let's start a consulting company.
He came to you.
He came to me.
That's pretty outstanding.
It was pretty awesome. Huh. He said, you can relate to the founders at like kind of the entry level. I can do all the high-level stuff, but the two of us together would be a pretty good partnership to kind of help consult for the pet industry.
Yeah.
So then I got to consult for, you know, a couple hundred companies, and before you know it, I know what's going on.
Okay. And so then the framework, tell me about that. What's the framework and how did you come about developing it?
So I
know you ask everybody and said, what do you want to buy? Which is obviously very
right,
smart, right?
Right.
You know?
But that's only one piece of it.
Okay.
I also compiled data on 62 companies that had sold in the pet industry,
mm-hmm.
and tried to kind of figure out what were the similarities. Why did one company sell for 12x and one company sell for 3x? And just kind of graphed out all of these sales. Found it, which is probably applicable to almost any consumer product, but mm-hmm. this one is specific to the pet space,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, gross margin is always the first thing they look for.
Mm-hmm.
Diversified distribution. So when you're talking big box, no one customer can account for more than 25% of distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And then brand awareness. If you nail those three KPIs, and
how do they define brand awareness?
So that's the toughest one. That's
share
like a
voice
nebulous
or something like that.
Yeah, it's we're doing our own tracking method around that. You know, mentions or social media kind of trends and whatnot. But that's a hard one.
Okay.
And that was kind of the companies that were selling for max value all would hit those three things really well.
Okay.
And then I basically bounced that off the brokers and bankers and verified that was indeed the best way to build a business, and they all said, yeah, if you did that, we could absolutely have 20 bids on this, and you know,
and then you looked for the company that would fit that. You found that through
that
your consulting.
That I could scale through that, yeah.
Okay.
Had to be USA made, had to be products that didn't expire on the shelf, so toys are perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Just manufacturing, so we do just-in-time manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do anything in China. That way, we don't have to hold inventory. There's not inventory on the water.
Yep.
And if you run out of one SKU and you're ordering in China, you might have to wait 4 months.
Yeah.
Whereas now, we can just spin that up in a couple days, and you know, we handle Walmart's load pretty easily mm-hmm. by doing it just-in-time.
Okay. And then for the negotiation of approaching your partner, can you share some of that? So somebody, let's say they go through this and they're like, oh, what a fantastic idea. I look for what the investment banking people can get offers on. Now they've got that. They found the company like you did. How do they approach, or how do you suggest, or how did you approach your partner on that and structuring a deal?
That was a tricky one because we were talking to Walmart at the time and the Walmart deal hadn't happened yet. But it was...
Meaning as a consultant, you were like taking them into the Walmart.
So he and I were friends because of the consulting company. Right. And he was like, hey, this thing is cooking. It might get a Walmart thing. And I was like, well, that sounds pretty cool. But mm-hmm. I can't buy the company based on what might happen with Walmart. Mm-hmm.
It's a mistake a lot of people make.
Right.
They give the company the value of...
The future value of things that haven't happened.
Which is the whole reason they're buying the company.
Right. Yeah. Right, right. So we developed a framework where the purchase price would be based on the next 2 years of Walmart sales. And if they hit certain things, it would cap it.
It's kind of an earn-out type deal.
It's an earn-out, yeah. Okay. Which also allowed us to have a structure where the owner carried back a big chunk of the purchase price because mm-hmm. it was based on these earn-out things. Mm-hmm. And if Walmart succeeded wildly, which it did, we're happy
company
to pay that amount.
Company pays for itself, basically.
Yeah,
on
company
the
pays for itself.
And how about the down?
So the down had to raise a nice little chunk, and that was just getting out there and talking to everybody. Yeah, I mean, you're always going to have to put some money down, especially for a company, a good company. Mm-hmm. If it's kind of a struggling company, you might not have to put something down. But in a good company, you're probably going to have to put something down and then have chunks along the way as you kind of get to that final purchase price.
Did you raise all of the money or did you invest part of money that you had already accumulated? Or
so I raised all of the money. Okay. I didn't
Which
have
I'm,
any money.
I'm a fan of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So and then how do you do that as far as to, let's just say that you were acquiring half of the company and then you're going to go out and raise the money to buy the half. How do you end up with anything or how do you structure that? Because I think that's something that doesn't get talked about a lot.
Yep. So I actually acquired 100% of the company and then gave back equity to the founder.
Okay.
To bring him on board because I wanted all of our interests aligned.
Okay. Can you share what roughly you gave him to come back equity-wise?
10%. And then there was another chunk on top that he could earn.
Performance-based?
Exactly.
Okay, great. So now you got 80%.
85, yep.
Available, right? Yeah,
yep.
Okay.
Yep. So basically, if Walmart performed the way I thought it was going to perform, there would be a spread between the price we paid for the company and what we could raise at.
Mm-hmm.
So we would raise money kind of along the way. I raised, you know, every 6 months I was out there raising a little bit more money.
They did JIT financing, basically.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. But every 6 months, the company was worth a little bit more.
Right.
So
you're increasing the valuation. The existing investors probably reinvesting because they see it going up in value.
Exactly. And I'm keeping the spread.
Okay.
So I wound up with right around 30%.
For free.
Yeah. Hard work and blood and sweat and tears and stress and all that.
That's why they call it sweat.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. Every 6 months, am I going to be able to raise this money again?
I love that as a case study, though. So because there's so many people that come to me and talk about how do I do equity deals? How do I, you know, what if I'm providing the funding? You were providing funding, but you were also providing other things too, right?
Right.
So
right.
What are the other services or other commitments that you made to the company? Because you came in obviously as CEO, so
yep.
you've got that.
So the company was just a manufacturing company. Mm-hmm. There was no marketing. There was no back office. There was no financials. So really, you know, I brought in a guy that I had worked with in the past who's a very trusted associate partner who ran the marketing, Matt Shepherdson. So brought in that and just built out this giant marketing and Amazon and fulfillment kind of portion of Bullybone. Bullybone right now, it's set up to ship, or back then is set up to ship pallets. So how do you send to Amazon if, you know, single packs, two packs, three packs, when we're just selling big cases that are shrink-wrapped on a pallet that we're shipping to Walmart?
Mm-hmm.
So we needed a facility where we shipped it, broke it down, packaged it up, and sent it to Amazon.
Yep.
So brought in a marketing arm, and then just the whole back office, which, you know, part of the plan is grow it 3 to 5 years, sell the company. Well, you better have all your data together. You better have your financials together. You better, you know, just make sure everything's in a row. Board meetings, P&Ls monthly, just going over everything, taxes. It's got to be so dialed in from a due diligence perspective.
Yeah, exactly. You're billing it for the due diligence.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you go to sell, I mean, that'll add a turn or two to your acquisition price just because it's all dialed in like that.
Yep.
And then there it limits the retrades. It just limits the availability for a buyer to come back and kind of try and beat you up.
Right. Okay. So what's the plan with that then? How much longer are you going to hold on to that before you let her go? You've had it for how long now?
A little over 3 years.
3 years, okay.
And it was a 3 to 5 year plan, so okay. the investors are pretty excited about it. I mean, we're getting to the point now where we're going to have a nice, healthy acquisition. We're already talking to strategics. They're flying out here to just have dinner and flying back. So there's a last phase to this whole plan, which is, you know, over the next 12 to 18 months, I got to court all the strategic people, mm-hmm. just kind of hang out with them. They already know about me because when I was doing all these things, I was always talking about Bully Bones. So for the past 3 years, I give them updates. I let them know how it's going. I see them at the trade shows, talk about it. So now it's time to really start putting the hard sell on them, letting them know all the success we're having and kind of that tickler out there that, you know, 12 to 18 months from now, we're probably going to be on the market.
Right.
And you should be bidding.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they may try to cut us off and buy us for a nice, right. healthy multiple before that.
It's always fun.
Right.
What if you don't go on the market? What if we just pay you a lot?
You're right.
That just happened to us with our Traffic and Conversion Summit event.
Really?
Yeah. We were approached by a giant event company and they said, you know, we're very interested in acquiring. And we're like, well, you know, we're not quite to where we want to go. And we've got some other people and they're like, here.
yeah.
Okay.
Just take this and smile. Oh, that's a nice one.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So that's really exciting. Now, let's hop to the place that you're at right now staying. You're staying at a place called the Entrepreneur House here in San Diego.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So it's a wild environment. I live in a house with 5 other entrepreneurs. They're all super
men,
successful.
Women, mixed.
There's one girl in there, Christine McDaniel, who does Kindred Quarters. It's a co-living kind of app platform. Okay. Shiv Shukla, who just raised $3.8 million for Neuralace. It's like a nerve treatment pain reduction type company.
All right.
Matt DeSell, who you know, William Painter, the sunglass guys.
Yeah.
And then James Hodges, who does some business coaching. And Ryan Brazell, who's does like virtual assistant kind of management for busy executives and CEOs and whatnot.
Okay.
So we have this cool environment where they're all just high-performing CEOs. And every Monday night, we sit down from 7 to 9 and have a mastermind. What are you working on? What do you need help with? Who do you need an introduction to? You know,
so nice.
It's so nice.
Yeah.
And we do a quarterly retreat where we sit down and we go over personal goals and fitness goals, financial goals, everything, relationships.
Is that managed? Is there a facilitator that's on around doing that? Or is it just internally done? Or
We all just kind of do it together. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. We have a cook, we have cleaners, we have laundry people, car people. Everything's just taken care
of. Makes your life easier so you can focus on your business.
So I can do 2 businesses at the same time.
Nice. What's next?
What is next? I'm really excited about HSEL and this whole high school esports thing. It's a wild world. And just continuing to build that team out, making sure I take good care of the Bully Bone investors and get this thing across the finish line. Those are kind of my focuses right now. And being in that house is really allowing me to kind of focus on that. And then, you know, there's things bubbling for the next phase, but I got to really see these two, kind of see them through first before I start moving on to all the other wild hairs I'm going to have.
Yeah, any of those wild hairs you can share?
There is a jewelry company. So my partner Shep, who is in Bully Bone, he has a Native American jewelry company called Turquoise Skies, where he basically has this giant facility. Native Americans in New Mexico come in and make jewelry, and then he sells it online. It does really well. I think I'm talking about it, thinking about it, starting a company where basically we would do the same thing with jewelry, but provide it to people at like big events, like the Speakeasy event, right?
Yep.
So if everybody had like a little bracelet or something that they put on before that event, we spent 5 minutes to kind of meditate, show them. Basically how it was made by Native Americans, where the turquoise was sourced, just kind of showing you what it is, using a little NLP to anchor into that piece of jewelry. And then you go through that whole event, and then at the end, you kind of close it out and anchor it in that piece of jewelry. Well, now you're setting a trigger on yourself for kind of good vibes or whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
That is going to be a passion of mine when this is all done, because I think if we can kind of raise the collective positivity amongst all of ourselves, it'll kind of filter down to all the people that we work with, and just kind of the rising tide will lift all ships.
I love it. The last thing I want to ask you about is from a motivational, staying focused, learning more kind of standpoint, what are you consuming and loving in terms of books, podcasts, and other stuff like that?
Yeah, I bounce around. I mean, it's really important to take, I don't know what you call it, spirituality or being present seriously.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm a big fan of the Eckhart Tolle stuff. That helps keep me grounded. The podcast, you know, I've been listening to Jason Calcanis is good. I really like his podcast. The LA Ventures podcast is pretty good. 20-Minute VC, kind of jamming on all those podcasts. Been listening to your podcast a lot lately.
Nice, yeah,
yeah,
cool.
You're doing good work on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and then books. Yeah, I'd say I'm just ripping on all the Eckhart Tolle stuff right now.
Yeah, okay.
Because this time in my life, living in that house, you know, it's only going to last, what, a year, year and a half more?
Yeah.
So really taking...
How old are you now?
39.
39, okay, cool.
Yeah. So taking the time to be present and, like, enjoy the moment, and it's real easy to be busy and rush through everything.
Yeah.
But really enjoying this time in my life that I'm going to look back on and just wish that I was more present. So being present is important.
That's awesome. Now, as far as people getting a hold of you, number one, do you want people to get a hold of you?
Yeah. I'd say LinkedIn's probably the best way to get a hold of me.
Okay, cool. Yep. And it's TrevorJensen?
Yep.
Jensen
Trevor Jensen. Correct.
And what about podcasts or other things like that that are in the future or that you have going on now?
Oh, that's, yeah.
For so yourself, I mean.
I'm co-hosting a podcast with a group that we're just kind of like getting it off the ground. It's called Accelerating.
Okay.
And it's going to be...
Accelerating or e-accelerating?
With an A, accelerating, okay. Yeah. So since we have this cool community and they're all doing cool things, we kind of want to... There's a guy, John Hamby, who's going to be the interviewer, and I'm going to be next to him kind of like co-interviewing.
Nice.
But just hearing all the stories about all the people in San Diego and all the entrepreneurs and the cool stuff they're doing.
Uh-huh.
So that is that's something I'm pretty excited about.
Nice. Awesome. Cool. Yeah. So LinkedIn, Trevor Jensen.
Yep.
Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Roland. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. If you're enjoying the show, let us know by subscribing and leaving a review. And for more information, go to businesslunchpodcast.com. Thank you for listening.
What if 3 days could change the course of your business in 2023? Get Scalable Live is where you'll gain great clarity on the next steps that will help you create the business, life, and wealth you deserve. Connect with business owners and entrepreneurs just like you, hungry for advice, proven strategies, and necessary connections to grow a business.
Literally, million-dollar conversations are happening in the hallways, in the bathrooms, across tables.
Get Scalable Live at Fairmont Austin, November 2nd through 4th. Tickets are on sale now at GetScalableLive.com.